Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday.
It's almost like it's the requirement, but also it just makes me feel good when you do that now. Like, now it's like, okay, we're going.
Doesn't feel like a Wednesday, though, does it?
It's been a little while since I've had that feeling of like, oh, wow. No, It feels like a Wednesday.
Feels like a Wednesday to you?
Use your calendar.
Do not use my calendar. The most I will use my calendar is for reservations that I've set up. And because that's like, I set it in a month in advance, I will forget about it.
20s, 30s.
That's the most I will use a calendar. I didn't use a planner in high school either. They gave you like those like nice like laminated planners. And like, yeah, you'll use the whole. I never used it once.
I used it for doodling.
Doodling, yep. Yeah. No, I can't even say it. I carried it around to make people believe I actually used it, but I never once used it. It was completely useless to me.
Oh, my God.
Same with calendars. Yeah.
When I was in high school, I'm pretty sure it was like a requirement that you had to have that with you.
By the time, I don't think it was a requirement. I think I did carry it around just to make people, the teachers, believe that I actually used it. Mm-hmm. I was a fine student. That was never how I did things.
I was not.
Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Bills are back to work today. Sean McDermott will be speaking around 12 o'clock, maybe a little bit before that. We'll get a word in with Sal Capaccio coming up at 10:30. We'll also get a look in at the Bills' opponent for this weekend, because we'll finally talk about the New Orleans Saints. Luke Johnson of the New Orleans Times will join us at 11. This is one of those situations now with where the Bills are at that I can't say growing up I ever really had this. It was every game felt huge. Because if the Bills won it, it was great. I mean, of course, growing up, I'm a drought kid, so it was growing up with 6-10 and 7-9 seasons. So every game felt important, especially games like this where it's, hey, we're both pretty bad. Let's get after it. Like let's grab a win that maybe we shouldn't, especially it's at home, the whole thing. Now that the Bills have become good, I have found myself, and I'm allowed to do this. I'm not on the team, but I have found myself. I do look ahead more towards, oh, the Falcons in 2 weeks, because I thought the Falcons would be a little bit better. Or, you know, Sunday Night Football with New England. I thought less and less about New Orleans as we got closer to the season, as the season began. And in part, it's because they're not very good. And you know, the point total shows they're 16.5. But it is one of those, like, the weird things of once you get good, you will forget about some of these games. Or realistically, you kind of don't even think about it. And it's maybe not the best way to go about it. It is football. These things happen. Syracuse was a 17.5-point dog against Clemson, and they whooped them. Wasn't even a particularly close game. So these things do happen. The way I look at the Bills, and even, I guess, the way I look at the Saints, the Bills are so well prepared in most of these situations. There's very rarely a trap game. That kind of error for them, McDermott Allen, seems to have passed them by. And really, the trap game is more of the definition of the following week is the big game. Like, it'd be like if Baltimore was next week and you're right. Like, oh, we're doing over preparation for them. The next week, the Bills have New England, who haven't looked particularly strong.
So they're
probably just like, yeah, we're going to go week by week by week by week.
Division game also does not mean trap game. Division games are a different beast entirely, no matter how good nor bad a roster is. A division game can always add a little spiciness. See Miami on Thursday night last week. The Saints have fallen so far from grace that I forgot that they played 4 years ago in 2021.
Is that the Alvin Kamara just run all over you game?
No.
Or is that the
That's the last time they were in Buffalo.
Oh, in Buffalo, okay.
Which is properly 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I forgot that they played in New Orleans in 2021.
It's a Thanksgiving game, right?
It is.
Yeah. Man.
And
they don't play them a lot.
The only thing that you remember about that, other than being Thanksgiving, is, oh, that's the day Trey White got injured.
Mm-hmm.
The first time around.
That's his first injury, yes.
And I think that's why I forget about that game, is because of the fact that they won going away, yet they didn't win that game at all. Zach, do you remember who the quarterback was in this game?
Ooh. Former Notre Dame quarterback. Is it Ian Book? No. That's not it. I'm trying to... Oh, man, who was their starting quarterback?
So, I'm just going to help you here. We have a show to do. We have to make sure that we're actually talking during said show. You got any more guesses, or are you...
Are you talking the game in New Orleans or the last time that they were in Buffalo?
So, the last time they were in Buffalo, that was Drew Brees.
I'm making sure I didn't completely botch this.
Thanksgiving game that I had made mention that, you know, I felt like I forgot about, so I decided to look at the box score. This man has played for 6 teams now. That helps nobody. But he ended up starting 4 games for the Saints that year. And before that, he started games with the Denver Broncos.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Brock Osweiler.
No.
I'm trying to go back to some of these.
But you are getting to a similar
era
of the Denver Broncos and their quarterback situation.
I mean, how many quarterback? I mean, it obviously not Wilson. It's not going to be. Oof. Not Drew Locke, obviously, because that would have been his first few years in Denver. Who is it?
It's Trevor Siemian.
Trevor Siemian.
Trevor Siemian plays this game. Trevor Siemian also.
That's a name that takes me back.
Also, in the 4 games that he starts that year, he has an 11-3 touchdown interception ratio. Good for you.
Good for him.
It was not in this game.
Well, can only hope for so much, really.
Yeah. When you're playing the Bills, things do tend to get going differently now in the 2020s.
I don't remember Trevor Siemian playing for them at all.
That is because this game was relatively forgettable. Except for the fact that Trey White got injured. So it's a game that people want to forget.
Yeah. I also totally thought Ian Book played for the New Orleans Saints. He never did.
No, he did.
No, they're 21. Yeah, 21. Yeah, that's right. It was close.
Yeah. Just not in this game. The leading rusher that day, by the way, also not Josh Allen. It was Devin Singletary. 44 yards on 15 carries, though.
Mm.
That has evolved since then.
But really, I mean, looking back at it in 21, like the Saints weren't a good team then.
I forgot Matt Breida was a Bill.
They haven't been a good team in a long time.
No.
And now the floor has fallen underneath them. But now, I mean, they're a horrendous team. Like you mentioned, though, the first 2 weeks they were a little stymie. They punched back. Closer games than maybe their first two opponents would have
scrappy,
liked.
Scrappy, I think, is the scrappy. Proper word for it.
But last week in Seattle, it just all fell underneath them.
It looked like the team that they are destined to be this year.
First overall pick kind of deal, full start over. You imagine Mickey Loomis, who's been the general manager. It feels like forever. It's definitely over 10 years. It's, I think, over 15 as well. He might be on his way out. I'm excited to pick Luke Johnson's brain here at 11, just because being an NFC team, you don't really think about them much. And to be fair, throughout their division as well, other teams have gotten way more spotlight. With Atlanta, it's the offensive weapons they've drafted, Michael Penix. This year, they made 2 picks in the first round, both for edge rushers. For Carolina, what's Bryce Young? Their ownership is kind of a nightmare. Tampa Bay wins and is maybe one of the more underrated organizations in the sport. And then there's the Saints. which is funny because for 20 years with Drew Brees and Sean Payton, they ran that division, or at least were one of always like the main figures in that division.
And 20 years is a pretty accurate number here, by the way, on what you're mentioning with the New Orleans Saints.
Is that how long Mickey Loomis has been there?
Mickey Loomis has been the general manager since 2002.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yes.
Oh, no. Oh, I'm sorry. No, that something's got to change there. Like, and it's one of those, like, even he has a Super Bowl, right? I mean, 09, yeah. He built another great team for those, like, late 2010s into the 2020s. You just sometime, at some point, got to change things.
Loomis, I think, is a great example of everyone has an expiration date.
Yeah.
Because he did do a good job, but also, even then, he was always flawed throughout no matter what. Loomis also should wear, the responsibility of Drew Brees missed the playoffs several times because the defense was that bad.
Right. The defense was awful.
So I do think he should be wearing that. And yet, he has been the general manager in New Orleans now for 23 years. What?
Wow. He's been with the organization at least since 2000.
Yep. And in 02, he's the general manager. He does get a title change in 2013 mm-hmm. to executive vice president / general manager.
Yeah, he doesn't really change. He actually just gets more.
He gets more power within the organization. Not that a general manager doesn't have a good amount of say anyway.
I guess it's one of those things, though, honestly, when you look at the history of the Saints, you can also understand why they maybe kept him for so long, because everything before him is the Aints. It's the paper bags. It's the we're a joke of an organization. We're barely an organization in football, and we've been around since the 70s.
Yes, he does take over.
It's not like they're like one of the 90s expansions where it's kind of weird that they're here and we're only sort of now getting to it's normal to see Jacksonville and the Houston Texans and the Carolina Panthers. The Saints have been an institution for quite a while. Just most of that history was awful. So in some ways, it's maybe why you do keep somebody like Loomis around so long is – inarguably, through his 20-plus years now at the helm, he's given you your best years. He's been a part of building a championship roster. They don't have a bad call against them against the Rams. They maybe go to a second Super Bowl and win it. And so just to play devil's advocate of why they've kept him here for so long, it probably plays a part in that of, I mean, look, for the Bills here, I think many of us argue, no matter really kind of how some of the results go in the playoffs, McDermott and Bean will probably stay. Why? They dragged them out kicking and screaming from their worst era, maybe ever, and made them one of the more respected organizations in the National Football League and have kept that going. Maybe the Saints is just kind of that the more long form of that. Of, no, he's kept us relevant. We're in a bad spot now, but he'll get us out of it. I don't really know. I mean, maybe there's also people pointing to Loomis going like, no, this is it. Like, he's got to wear this on his face, but he's out once, you know, once the smoke clears, someone else can take over.
And most of his tenure is tied to Sean Payton.
Mm-hmm.
He has the end of Jim Haslett's head coaching career, but then Sean Payton comes in. And that's where they just start rifling off seasons, where they are either double digits or 7-9. Double digit wins or 7-9. That is pretty much exclusively what it looks like for them when Payton takes over. In 2006, they go 10-6. They lose in the conference championship. There's a 7-9 season, 8-8, which is the rarity here. And then 13 wins, 11 wins, 13 wins. The Super Bowl is in there as well. 7-9, 11 wins, 7-9 for 3 years in a row. 11-13, 13-12, and then Peyton's final year in New Orleans is a 9-8 season. So there are peaks, but there's also
some pretty low valleys.
There's five years of going 7-9 with Drew Brees as your quarterback.
Yeah, it gets fairly low there for a little while. And that's kind of what a lot of Drew Brees' career is remember for is those 5,000-yard seasons when they're not winning football games.
Mm-hmm.
He gets the ring early in 09, but that's a lot of the middle part of his careers. He's wonderful. The team is really, really bad. But they eventually figure out. I mean, you get the Michael Thomas years, Alvin Kamara, you know, Cam Jordan, and they fix the defense, and they have those runs there. They're kind of one of like those more like lost rings, I guess, if you want to, or missing rings that they used to do on NFL Network, those documentaries. The late 2010, early 2020 Saints are one of those teams that you think about of like, man, they probably should have gotten back to another Super Bowl, if not two, and maybe won another one. But looking at this, the current roster now for the 2025 Saints, this is exactly what most expected from them. 0-3, they have not looked good to start. Closer games, as we've mentioned, a little scrappy against Arizona and San Francisco, and the floor really kind of fell underneath them at Seattle, 44-13. Now they come to Buffalo. It is not going to be Tyler Shuck. It is going to be Spencer Rattler, who is their starting quarterback. After that, it's really like two names to know on offense. Alvin Kamara, who's been a fantasy darling and an overall just really good player for years now. And Chris Olave at wide receiver, who has kind of all the talent in the world, but it seems like every few weeks he's picking up a concussion. That's not correct, obviously, but it feels like all the time you're seeing Chris Olave, concussion protocol. Great talent, but not much pass there.
I do worry about the long-term health of Chris Olave because of the constant concussions that he has had. And it's in the same light of Tua. Except Olave also plays a position where you are going to get hit more.
You are going to get hit much more. And you know, Cam Jordan's still on the team, but he is very, very old now. He's well past his prime. I just, you know, really looking at this now, and Derek, we've talked about this both on air and off air, looking at the schedule past Baltimore for week one, how much will we really learn from the Bills until October, November? Because you look at this team and you go, even a bad Bills defense probably does fairly well against them. At home, 1 o'clock, you've had more than enough rest. You had actually an extended rest because you played on Thursday. So you had an extended period of time to prepare for a Saints team. We'll see if Ed Oliver and Matt Milano both play. Neither practiced last week and, of course, then did not play. But that's where I just look at how buttoned up the Bills have been the last few years, how much they, while have not gotten the one seed, have always been in those conversations. They don't drop many of those games anymore. I'm not saying that was not a problem years ago. It was. But now it seems to have somewhat stalled. Now they seem to just take care of business. They may not cover. It's a 16.5-point spread. That would be insane. That's an insane cover if they actually get that. But I do wonder just what can we learn, both offensively and defensively. Offense, we kind of know what they are. They're going to average 30 points. They might do it in a style many don't like, but it's still going to happen. The defense, the feeling is, of course, you know, bad on third down. Rushing defense, still not the best.
Right.
You know, what is your back end of your defense with the safeties? We're still kind of asking a lot of those questions. They are 3-0, but those questions are still there. I just don't know if any of them are going to be able to even be answered against the Saints roster.
It's kind of scary that you say, like, November is where you're starting to get, like, actual evaluation from the Bills. That's probably spot on. Atlanta has not really looked like the team that they were hoping to be.
You may not play Michael Penix because he's benched.
And that's after New England, which is after New Orleans. Then you have the bye week, and then you have Carolina. You're playing the bottom portion of the NFC South, within which that Tampa has also had a lock on that division for years now.
Mm-hmm.
For as long as the Bills have had the East.
Yeah, very quietly.
And unlike Buffalo with having Miami in, just annoyingly around, Tampa only almost lost a division to Atlanta because of their own incompetence one year. That's it. That's the end. You're learning nothing until you get to Kansas City.
November 2nd.
And that's November 2nd. That said, take care of business. Host Kansas City and be 7-0. Apologize to nobody. Because the schedule's not going to apologize either.
Well, no, and this thing, we knew the schedule well in advance. They knew what this was going to be. The schedule has gotten actually somewhat easier.
The month of November is their biggest test.
Yeah, but I mean, the schedule has gotten easier. Cincinnati, they don't have Joe Burrow. right? I mean, that did happen. And teams like New England, who we maybe thought were going to be, you know, arguably much better than they were last year, don't really look like that at all yet. They still seem to be missing a lot of talent. It's just, you know, we talked about it even leading up to Baltimore of how much, like, the season really wouldn't be defined even if they lost that game, because there was a good chance they could go into that Kansas City game with only the one loss, that they would be able to get through the Jets, the Dolphins, Saints, Patriots, Atlanta. Now they've gotten through Baltimore. It's just, yeah, you're really not going to be able to have definitive answers. I saw Sal talking about this with a lot of listeners going through the defensive rankings and some of the offensive rankings, and people were pointing out, well, look who they played. And to Sal's credit, he's like, look, you can take this any way you want. It's up to you how you want to take it.
Right.
But I think that is somewhat true in the sense of, look who you have played. The schedule is going to be very easy for them. We mentioned this yesterday, that ultimately the Bills have credibility. They've been here and done that for the last few years. You mentioned they've won the division, what is it now, five? They're going on six straight years. They had the credibility of, well, yeah, the 3-0. We know they're good. Now we're going to see if they can get the one seed. Now we're going to see if they can win 14, 15 games in a year and eventually make it to a Super Bowl. But with the schedule they have and the questions they have, I think that's a specific part of this too. You just won't be able to get the answers. If the questions were, hey, is our quarterback any good? You'll just take anything. If he's lighting up bad opponents, great. That's what you want with your defense. The big question is January. And the one test they've had, they gave up 40 points and maybe gave Derrick Henry his last great game. That's very early, but
yeah, I was going to say, you're jumping the gun a little bit
here. So far through three games, it's been the one he hasn't looked bad in.
You're actually playing jump rope with that gun.
But it's the only one so far he hasn't looked great, or that he hasn't looked bad in. He looked great against the Bills. Looked exactly like we always imagined him to be. And so that, I think, is maybe the more specific part is what their questions are simply can't be answered until they do play Kansas City with their full complement of weapons, until they play an Eagles team with all of their – Tampa Bay with all their weapons. And you won't get that until November, and for some of them, December.
And November is their best quality of competition, but it's also got something in a condensed week in there thrown in as an extra little challenge. So Kansas City, Miami, Tampa, Houston, Pittsburgh. Houston's a Thursday night. And that kind of gives a little bit of an advantage to the Texans, who have a good defense but a struggling offense. So if the defense can play the Bills tight a little bit in the game, maybe there's a good chance for them. But Houston's 0-3.
Yeah. And their offense looks broken.
Their quarterback looks broken.
Mm-hmm.
They've broken C.J. Stroud. By the way, you mentioned the Derrick Henry thing, though, now. I think I'm allowed to take it personally again.
Oh, that it's the Bills in particular.
I'm allowed to take it personally again from what I'm sensing from the season.
We'll see. I mean, I'm being a little aggressive on that. But also, it's true. Through three games, the one he's looked any good in is the first one against Buffalo.
I am back to taking it personally because he spells Derek wrong.
But yeah, I mean, again, like you mentioned Houston there, though. But Houston, when the schedule came out, ooh, interesting game. Short week as well. All right. Like,
yeah, that could be tough.
Now, cool. You stop Nico Collins, you're probably fine. If you can deal with their two edge rushers, you'll be just fine.
Ed, ready? I don't want to be as irritated as I was with Miami, but that game, get to the quarterback. It's Houston's offensive line, please.
Well, on that, I haven't sat down and watched how quickly C.J. Stroud is getting the ball out. That was much more of like, that's just how Tua and that offense has to go. Get it to his first read, get it out quick, and go, 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 go. I don't think Houston is that. So that might be part of that problem as well.
And the Bills did kind of operate to the strength of Miami, and like they did not eliminate Tua's read fairly often. So the ball's out immediately. And there were more pressures than there were actually like the defensive line non-existent in that game. Like Tua's flushed out a couple times, he has to throw it away or things like that. But they also let Miami hang around in a game that really they shouldn't have.
Oh, yeah, there's a few points they should have put that away. Yeah.
And that could happen again in this game.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Against New Orleans. And that leads us to what we're talking about for like the next 3 weeks until the bye week. As you said, there may not be anything to learn about them. I'm going to go ahead and say you can only learn bad things about them, mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is worse.
That's kind of where I've been at. It's a lot like the preseason is just when you're a good team, you can kind of only learn or you can only have bad takeaways realistically from the preseason. And that may actually end up being true for this stretch, too, because, again, like let's say the defense plays great against New Orleans.
Cool, it's New Orleans.
Yeah, I think, understandably, many people would say, cool, it's New Orleans. 803-0550, the number to call. Coming up next, we'll get a look in at the Bills, who will begin practice this week today. Sean McDermott will speak at 12 o'clock. We'll get our first injury report as well. Sal Capaccio will join the show. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive X Point Show, and this is WGR.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Filling up right behind the Bills bench right now with their flags and their hey, 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 hey. Hey, 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 hey. Let's go Buffalo chant.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Let's go Buffalo. The Bills make me wanna shout.
Welcome back, everyone. You know that music, so you know what time it is. It is a Wednesday. The Bills get back to work. And with that, we go to the Western Hotline. Sal Capaccio joins the show. Sal, how are we doing? Good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you? Hope you enjoyed your football watching weekend. And now back at it here with the Bills hitting the practice field today. Little while. And, you know, getting ready for the New Orleans Saints on Sunday.
We're getting ready for the Saints. And, Sal, me and Derek were talking about it, too. I mean, look, we've all looked at the schedule past Baltimore, the whole thing, and how there is that – I've called it the soft underbelly. And in some ways, it's even gotten somewhat nicer for the Bills with Joe Burrow maybe being out for the year, Houston really looking rough on offense especially. But, Sal, when you're looking at this next stretch of games, New Orleans, of course, being really the first one there, what are you keeping your eye on through the first 3 weeks with the Bills now being 3-0?
Well, I think that you have to button up the third down defense that showed its ugly head again against the Dolphins. Sean McDermott was very happy with first and second down defense that forced him into third downs, and that's right. But, you know, there were some plays where the Bills could have stopped the Dolphins a little bit sooner. I think this is a game where, let's face it, you're not facing as high in quality of an opponent. So even though the numbers, you might come out, and you know what people do, the numbers come out, you're like, well, you only played the Saints. But there's an opportunity against another NFL team to fix that, and that's what you need to do this week. And I'm going to be watching for that. Injuries are going to be obviously really on the forefront because the Bills have Ed Oliver and Matt Milano this week. We'll be watching. And then guys, let's just even assume, you know, and we all know that they're not long-term injuries. So let's say they play, they don't play. It doesn't really matter at this point for the purpose of next week, what's happening with everybody who could start practicing again, like Max Harrison and Tyler Bass. We'll see. And then of course, Larry Hoyt, I always do that. Larry Ogunjobi and Michael Hoyt, and they could wind up, you know, and they're going to start, you know, coming back to the facility, even though they can't play for a few weeks. So I think what I'm watching for is just kind of the evolution of the team over the next few weeks, A, on the field, on a couple of things that you want to be a little bit buttoned up on as you go forward into a tougher stretch a little bit later, and B, the roster management of the team, and you hope you have tough decisions because that means you're staying healthy.
So on those tough decisions, Sal, and I heard a little bit of what you were talking about this morning with Jeremy and Joe, but with Hoyt and Ogunjobi coming back, Hoyt, I heard much more about him during the summer of, you know, when he was going up against backups, he looked like a man amongst boys. You know, they obviously signed him to a much longer deal. There seems to be more of a belief in a long-term plan with him. But also Ogunjobi, we know Deion Walker's been playing very well as a rookie, the fourth rounder. He's really kind of, you know, outside of Jackson Hawes, he seems to be making the most headlines for Bills rookies. TJ Sanders, though, not so much. Not saying that he's been terrible or anything, but, you know, obviously less than Deion Walker up to this point.
Yeah, for sure. And listen, I mean, again, let me just reiterate to everybody, we are a few weeks away from this happening, right? This is not next week. Next week, they can come back into the facility. They are not even playing until after the bye week. But I do think you have to start having a vision for how the roster looks between now and then. This isn't a deal where you can just say, oh, we'll keep him on the suspended list. Now, if a guy was IR, you could do that. If the Bills don't want to put Max Harrison or Tyler Bass on the field next week, they don't have to. It can take as long as they want. But these guys, you know, they're going to come off suspension. So it is a few weeks down the road, but I do think you have to have a vision for what the team and the roster looks like. And I agree with you that TJ Sanders hasn't flashed as much as Deion Walker, but I don't think he's been bad either. He's had plays early on, first game, Baltimore. Sean McDermott said on the radio show with me after the game, he said, well, the effort was there, and was kind of like a backhanded compliment, I think, saying, hey, they still need to do things a little bit better. And that's okay. That's to be expected. Run defense has been much better the last 2 weeks. Those guys have been a big part of it, the two rookies. So we'll see where it goes. You hope you have those tough decisions to make when it comes time. But in the meantime, this is another opportunity for TJ Sanders and Deion Walker, both of them, to get more reps. I think that's what's really important here. You got this week, you got next week against the Patriots, and then you have Monday Night Football against the Atlanta Falcons. These guys still have to play for three more games, and you hope that that experience allows them to force the coaches to have to make a real tough decision.
Sal Capaccio joining us here on the Westerr Hotline. Bills and Saints this Sunday. A rare 1 o'clock at home, by the way. That's something that's going to be fascinating to look back on through the season. But Sal, with the Saints coming up here, and there's opportunity to be had when it comes to facing a Saints team that last week, I think the floor fell out for New Orleans there and looked like the team that a lot of people are worried they might be.
Yeah, there is. I don't know. Are you asking me a specific question? I don't know what you're asking me. Sorry.
No, it more or less is. There's plenty of opportunity for this team, but it's a Saints team, though, coming in here that they are starting to look like the team that is in shambles.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I mean, listen, they got pounded last week by the Seattle Seahawks, right? I mean, but every game is different. You don't know exactly what's in store when they come in here, and you know what they're gonna have up their sleeve or want to do to you because they're trying to kind of salvage a little bit here. They're gonna when you get beat like that. Well, it says that you could very well just not have much talent on your roster, which that might be the case. It also could be the point of, you go and redo some things and say, what can we do better and fix? Where are our strengths? Where are our weaknesses? And they change a lot of what they do. So I think, you go back and watch the Seattle tape if you're the Bills, and you can figure something out with the Saints. But I bet you they also have some different approaches because they don't go to a game and come out of that game and say, we're going to do the same thing. They're going to try and do some different things. But look, Spencer Rattler, young quarterback, and, Sean McDermott has a very good record against rookies. And I know he's not a rookie, last year was, but he's a first-year starter, young quarterback. And, he's going to do some things. The crowd's going to be tough on them when they have the ball. Obviously, they're going to have a tough day going against the Bills defense in that environment. But you have to be ready for them to have a better game plan and something that they can kind of go back to the drawing board for. So, yes, I don't know if I say they're in shambles. I just think that they're not that talented. And then, we'll see where it goes.
Sal, one of the big storylines, I guess, for everyone to keep up on this week especially is going to be the injuries on defense. Ed Oliver, of course, after having his smash success of a week one game, has been dealing with an ankle injury, right? And then Matt Milano now has also picked up an injury as well. It never really felt like last week they were ever going to play against the Dolphins with it being a short week. Now, though, it's been a little while since we've heard from the Bills. What's your feeling on the status for both of them? Do we think there's a chance both of them could play, either of them? Where are we at?
We'll find out in about an hour from now. Sean McDermott will talk to the media. He'll give us an update on both those guys, and we'll find out a little bit more clarity on if maybe they practice today, maybe they're available on Sunday. I've gotten the feeling that, ever since this all happened a couple weeks ago, that maybe Milano was a little closer simply because there was never really a question if Oliver would practice last week, guys. He wasn't going to practice. There was a point last week where Sean McDermott said Matt Milano could practice. So to me, it feels like Milano's ahead of Oliver, but that doesn't mean that both of them can't be ready to play on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Maybe you give it another week, and we just talked about TJ Sanders and Deion Walker, the experience they're getting. Those guys, another week of experience. If you feel that they can get the job done adequately, you might want to rest Ed Oliver for another week. As long as Matt Milano is healthy enough to play and there's no well, it really goes for both guys. As long as there's no real, you know, risk of re-injury, I guess, that would be something the Bills would probably put them both on the field.
Sal, back to something that I managed to bring up and I wanted to get your thought on, though, of this is one of two, potentially three 1 o'clock games left at Highmark Stadium. What does it mean for, you know, for you and for, you know, and many fans that this is not only rare, but especially within the last season of the current Highmark Stadium, that there's going to be two, maybe three 1 o'clock games at home this year?
Yeah, I mean, that's just the world we live in now, right? That the Bills are good, so they're going to get a lot of primetime games. Charles Davis is on the call for CBS, and whenever Charles does the games, we talk a little bit to get a little bit, you know, compare notes so he can get more familiar with the roster and things. And we spoke yesterday on the phone, and I said that to him. I said, you know, a rare 1 o'clock game for you here. He said, I know. He said that's what happens when you guys are good, right? He said, Sal, you remember all the times when the Bills would never have primetime games? I'm like, yep, we talk about that a lot here in Buffalo, no doubt. I don't know if I'm thinking as much about a rare 1 o'clock game for the final year of the stadium. I think that comes along with just every game. But I do think that, you know, having just a 1 o'clock game in September is cool because I like, you know, having warmer weather 1 o'clock games. I think the Orchard Park looks good, you know, things like that. So, yeah, I mean, there's more night games coming next week again, a night game at Highmark, and then they're not home at all until the Chiefs game in mid-November. And then it's really a bunch of 425 games against the Chiefs and the Bengals and, you know, the Eagles later in the year. So really, yeah, 1 o'clock home game against the New Orleans Saints. I think it's cool that they're having that they have a 1 o'clock home afternoon game. It's great for the fans who have to spend late nights at these night games and early mornings and things like that. But that's the price you do pay in that regard when you're a really good team and all the networks want to have a piece of Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills.
Sal Capaccio here for just a few more minutes. Sal, getting away from football, I would feel rude if I didn't ask you about this. So the Yankees are having a hell of a run here to end the year, winning six of the last seven. They're one game out of the AL East. They did clinch a playoff spot last night following their 3-2 win. How are we feeling?
The Yankees did what the Blue Jays had been doing for a while, right? Which is they were kind of dead in the water, and then they have a walk-off win. And the Blue Jays had that run where they were just coming back every single night, it seemed like. They were down, they would come back and they'd win. You know, the Yankees, but they have no excuse not to sweep the White Sox. They have to sweep the White Sox. I was really thinking last night, I'm watching the whole game, and I really thought, man, what a missed opportunity. The Blue Jays lose, they were about to lose, and you never know again, like I just said, because they had so many late inning wins. But, and then here you are against basically, are the White Sox the worst team in the league record-wise, second worst, whatever they are, I don't know, behind Colorado, whatever. But here you are, you can't put them away. Like, that was just deflating. And then, you know, they had their chances in the seventh and eighth, and suddenly in the ninth inning, they get a couple of guys on. You're like, okay. And then I don't know if you saw how it happened, but then there's a double play, and they're down to their final strike. And it's a 3-2 count, and it's a wild pitch, and Volpe scores to tie it. You're like, oh, my God, they have to win this game now. They do. So I think big picture, though, guys, Red Sox are still fighting. Blue Jays have a tough out here. So, I mean, tonight's big if the Yankees win, and they need to sweep the White Sox. They really do. And the Blue Jays lose to the Red Sox, they are tied. The only issue for the Yankees is they have to finish ahead because the Blue Jays have the head-to-head, and no longer does baseball do a one-game playoff. It comes down to head-to-head if you're tied.
Yeah, it's a really fun end here to the season, especially in the American League, because not even just that, but the AL Central, Detroit has lost their entire, 15-game lead over Cleveland?
It's unbelievable. I've never seen it. I was reading today, this morning, I think it could be the worst collapse in Major League history, I think, by the number of games they were back. I think, if I read that right.
Well, Detroit, and that's the thing, too. Detroit right now, they're in that last wild card spot. Houston is one game back from them. I mean, like, Detroit might go from having a 15-game lead to not even making the playoffs if this all goes poorly for them. The Yankees,
can you imagine if two months ago any of us said that the Detroit Tigers wouldn't make the playoffs or might not make the playoffs, so they'd be barely holding on, like, we'd be like, what's going on? You'd think they had all these injuries, and I don't know, maybe they have a couple injuries, but that's not the case. They just have not played that well. And then the Mets, I mean, what's happening with them too?
Right? I know.
I mean, holy cow.
Oh, yeah.
They've had an awful run too. It was to start the week. it was the first time they weren't in a playoff spot since like April 5th. I'm like, that's incredible. With that being said, though, they won last night, so they are currently in that wild card spot, and they play the Cubs again tonight. The Yankees, of course, have another game against the White Sox at 7:05, and then Blue Jays and Red Sox at 7:07. Sal, we'll let you get ready for practice today. You mentioned Sean McDermott speaking around 12 o'clock, maybe a little before, maybe a little after, but of course, we'll follow all that at Sal Sports over on Twitter. Thanks so much, man. We'll talk again soon.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Sal.
Sal Capaccio there on the Wester Hotline. And yeah, this is my thing with baseball. I'll go away for a little while from it. I'm an Angels fan. Like they've won 70 games. Like,
you have to go away from it for a while.
But like the last like 2-3 weeks of the season, and then of course playoff baseball, I am locked in and I've really enjoyed this. It is a little bit tougher to find games to watch. Like usually Yankees and Mets games are very easy for me to watch, but I'm very excited to keep an eye on a lot of this because not really keeping an eye much on the NL outside of the Mets. The AL, though, has been a blast to just see the heavy swings that the division races have gone under. Toronto, not that long ago, had a 5-game lead, I think, with like 15 games to go, and it felt like they're going to be just fine. Now they're kind of fighting for their lives here. Boston also trying to clinch a playoff spot as well as they take on the Blue Jays, and as mentioned, the Yankees with the White Sox. 803-0550, the number two call. We'll get a look in on the Saints' point of view of this game. Luke Johnson will join the show at 11 o'clock. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR. Wrapping up hour number one here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, Zach Jones and Derek Kramer. Today's show is brought to you, as always, by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Sabres did play again last night, and they won again last night to start the preseason 2-0. They win last night 2-1.
Plan the parade.
Dude, we've already got a DJ booked. Come on.
But in all seriousness, there is something that in preseason, you can even see it from the players themselves. They don't want to be risking anything in preseason. You typically know where the standing of the players are going to be for the most part. But then I see Rasmus Dahlin run over a man yesterday, and I'm like, oh, you're telling these AHLers that they're AHLers, aren't you? And like, because Columbus did trot out a mostly AHL squad last night. The hit before the Zucker goal, man, Dahlin puts a man down.
Yeah, he had himself weirdly a great night.
He puts a puck between like two different players' legs during the course of the night. He's like, no, this is fantasy camp for you guys. I'm Rasmus Dahlin. And like, it's so mean. But at the same time, that is like, hey, I'm Rasmus Dahlin, you're not. And here's what's going to happen.
Very sit-down clown kind of energy.
Kind of. Like, again, it's so mean to say it, but like, that's what he made it look like. And then, so you want to see like moments like that where like, okay, he's ready for the year. But then there's also players like a Konstantin Hellenius. Hellenius makes a really nice toe-drag move in the first game against Columbus on Monday night. And then last night, he has a real slick pass for Jason Zucker for what would ultimately be the game-winning goal. Do I love that they only beat mostly AHLers 2-1 last night with a good amount of the pro team in the lineup? No. But you look for things because it's preseason hockey. Weird things happen. Goalies spin on their heads, this, that, and the fourth.
Right.
But Konstantin Hellenius making plays, big plays, in back-to-back nights is a nice thing. Does it mean anything for this team this year? Probably not. But is it nice to at least admire? Absolutely.
Yeah, sure. Same with Zach Benson's pass to Tate Thompson, except that first goal. Looks really nice. May not mean anything in the regular season. Well, we like Benson, but still nice to see.
But it's more or less, get out healthy, and if players like Hellenius are going to make some noise to try to make the bottom six of the roster, go for it.
Sabres only have 4 more preseason games this year.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Two against Detroit Thursday and Saturday, and then two against Pittsburgh next Wednesday and next Friday. 803-0550, the number to call. We'll get a look in on the Saints. Luke Johnson for the New Orleans Times will join the show at the top of the hour. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR.
Ready, reset. Inside the red zone. Rattler was 8 of 12 last year inside the red zone. It makes life easier when he gives it to Kamara, and he's into the end zone. Touchdown, Saints.
That is New Orleans Saints quarterback Spencer Rattler, who, while the team is 0-3, the numbers at least, don't look too bad for him. Four touchdowns, just one pick, 67 completion percentage. I've known Rattler for a little while, Derek. He was on a Netflix documentary looking at high school quarterbacks, and he was one of those guys. Eventually, obviously goes on to play at South Carolina, Oklahoma. But I've weirdly known Spencer Rattler for a little while.
You've known about Spencer Rattler. You
about
don't
him.
Know.
I,
you don't
I know him. I watched a documentary. I know him now. Goes by Spence. I know him.
Social.
We'll get more on the New Orleans Saints. The Bills will host them this Sunday at 1 p.m. as we are joined now on the Western Hotline, Luke Johnson of NOLA.com. Luke, thanks so much for jumping on with us this morning. How you doing?
Hey, my pleasure, fellas. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
So, I mean, right off the rip there, I mean, the Saints are 0-3. I think the expectations, you know, externally were not incredibly high for the Saints, but what have you guys that are covering the team been able to see for them for almost now the first month?
Well, you know, for the first couple of games, they kind of played how I was anticipating they'd play, which is, you know, they'd be losing some games, but they'd be playing teams pretty tight, pretty feisty. Obviously that was not the case last week. So, I'm really looking forward to just kind of figuring out exactly who this team is. Because I don't think we really have a true sense of that yet. And, you know, frankly, I'm not sure we're going to get a sense of it after this week. I don't think anybody here outside of the Saints building is, you know, giving them, you know, literally any shot. Like, that huge point spread, I think, is what about everybody feels about this game. But, look, I don't think that by the time the season's over, we're going to be talking about this as the worst team in the NFL. But I do feel like we're probably going to be getting ready for a top 10, top 5 pick at some point in the next couple months.
And, I mean, obviously that could be used for a quarterback. But as we mentioned there, you know, the clip Spencer to Kamara, you know, what has Rattler looked like? I think for many people the expectation was, especially after the second round pick, that it would be Tyler Shuck that starts the season. That has not been the case at all.
Yeah, you know, I think – maybe some of the outside perception of Spencer Rattler coming into the season was really based off of what he did last year as a rookie. And yeah, that was a really tough evaluation for him. You know, people had no reason to watch the Saints last year. They were incredibly boring. And after that first two games of the season, they started off really hot. They went in the tank really quickly. But when Spencer played last year, it was like he was playing in the fourth quarter of a preseason game with like the guys he was playing with. They had so many injuries last year. Just they ran through like 13 or 14 starting offensive line combinations. Their best two receivers went out after week 6 and week 8. Alvin Kamara didn't play for a chunk of last year. It was like he was playing with the JV roster. So it was really, really hard to get an evaluation of him last year. You got some glimpses of what he could do, but you know, it looked bad because he was playing with a bad team. I think he's come in this year a more confident player who learned from that experience last year with a pretty good offensive play caller in Kellen Moore and a better set of weapons around him. And I think he's kind of shown that he's much better than what people thought. The part this year that I still think at some point we're going to see Tyler Shuck starting for this team. Like, they got to see what they have in him, especially if they continue losing, because they could be right back in the quarterback thing next year. But with Spencer, I mean, if he's going to hold off and and stay in the starting lineup. Like he's got to win games. He has not done that yet as a pro. You know, you can argue whether quarterback wins are a stat or not, but fact of the matter is the Saints are 0-9 in games he started. And you know, to me, he's got to connect on some shots downfield. They have one player on the entire roster right now averaging better than 10 yards catch. And it's their second string tight end.
Yeah, that's something I want to jump in on. I do want to ask about Kellen Moore, but you mentioned the receivers there. Chris Olave, at least against Seattle, but I mean really throughout the year, 10 catches for 57 yards. I'm like, how does that even happen, Luke? Like, what happened? What's going on there?
Yeah, it's, you know, I think part of it is Kellen wants, he's got a young quarterback, right? You know, we just got done talking about that. They're missing some pieces on the offensive line. I think his idea for this offense is you kind of like think about the really good Warriors teams of the past in the NBA. Mm-hmm. They're making layups and three pointers, right? So he wants to do a bunch of quick passing game. He wants to get the ball to his playmakers, use that as an extension of the run game, and then when he can, take his shots. Problem is, they haven't been able to take any shots. Yeah. They haven't connected on any of them. I think Spencer's like 3 of 13 on passes that travel 20 yards downfield. The intermediate passing game is just like not there. So all they're doing is they're connecting on a lot of short, easy throws. And yeah, part of that is because teams are playing the too high shell on them. Like that sits there. When you look at this offense, you see Chris Olave, you see Rashid Shaheed and the two fast guys. And it's, when they were going good last year, they were connecting on a bunch of bombs downfield and all that stuff. But like, yeah, at the same time, you got to see something more than what they're doing right now, because it's just not working. Teams are like, yeah, you can try to put together 15 play drives all you want, but they haven't really succeeded in the red zone. And when you're taking away the explosive aspect of this offense, it makes it a lot harder on an inexperienced unit. So, I just don't know when that's going to change, but I feel like something's kind of got to give there, because you're really not taking advantage of your best players. That's Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed are averaging like 8-9 yards a catch.
And looking to the future here with the rest of this season, Luke, you mentioned how they'll probably end up throwing Tyler Shuck in at some point this year. But it does look like I've always been fascinated with Mickey Loomis's tenure as the Saints general manager. And it does look like over these past couple of years, this has been the price to pay for almost kicking the cap tax down the road to try to stay relevant in seasons past.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would agree with you on that. I think to me, it's like that plays a big part in it. And then they also whiffed on some guys. And some guys who I think they made good decisions on in the moment to extend, didn't pan out after the extension. You know, they signed Michael Thomas to a 5-year, $100 million deal when that was a big, big contract for a wide receiver. Mm-hmm. He sets the NFL record for receptions in the first year of that deal, and then plays like 8 games for the rest of it. You know, Ryan Ramczyk signs a big deal as a right tackle, highest paid right tackle in the NFL, and develops chronic knee problems. You know, Marshawn Lattimore hurt over and over and over again after the extension. And then, you know, they decide to try to extend or to keep Marcus Davenport instead of Trey Hendrickson. Miss, you know, these draft classes where they're swinging and missing on guys like Peyton Turner and Trevor Penning, and you know, the list goes on. I think it goes a lot deeper than the kicking the cap down the road. It's like pretty much every turn, the decision backfired on him. And then, you know, then when you don't have production out of the guys you're paying top of the market, that's when your depth gets really exposed. So I think it plays a big part of it, but there's a lot more to it, in my opinion, just as somebody who's been around covering this team for a long time.
Right. And again, Loomis has been the general manager there for 23 years. Is there any sort of temperature on what the potential end of that tenure might be looking like?
If you were to ask the fan base, they would say they hope it's boiling. But I think it's a unique situation here. with Mickey Loomis as the general manager and his role with his franchise going forward. I don't think it's as simple here as it is in a lot of places where you're talking about, like, you know, you're not producing, so let's get you out of the building. Because you know, there's just a lot that goes into this. You know, Tom Benson was the owner here for a long time. He brought Mickey in, and Mickey was part of the inner circle. You know, Mickey is still part of that, like, their plan. Like, he's de facto written into the will, right? You know, there's plans in place for Mickey Loomis to have a role within this organization beyond his time as GM. So, like, I think it's not as simple as your record hasn't been good enough, like you're ousted. Yeah, I think it's got to be like, if he is not going to be in that role, you know, it's going to be he's pushed into like an advisory role where he's still playing a part in the organization, but somebody else is calling the shots. That I think might be possible, but I think that would not be a willing move on Mickey Loomis's part. And this is all just kind of based on vibes, really. Yeah, you know, we've been asking Mickey about this for 4 or 5 years now, and he's just kind of steadfastly refused to even really acknowledge the idea of stepping down. So I can tell you that the fan base here is definitely ready for it. He's in some extremely hot water with them because they're kind of tired of the losing.
Luke Johnson of NOLA.com here on the Wester Hotline. Luke, I did mention, I mean, we asked about Mickey Loomis there. Now to their rookie head coach, Kellen Moore, who he's young, 37. He's already, though, before being the Saints head coach, had three stops as an offensive coordinator, some varying in terms of success. But he has been kind of just like a pinnacle in football for years. If you're a college fan, you know him for having like 50 wins and 3 losses at Boise State. And then really immediately after his playing career ended, he got into coaching and was quite successful at it. What's been the feeling of the initial hiring from the fan base and now through 3 games?
Yeah, I think the fan base is a little skeptical at first. It's really hard to argue with the resume. You know, he coordinated 4 top 10 offenses in 6 years as an offensive coordinator, play caller. Yeah, obviously he's coming off the Super Bowl run. He's a guy who has managed to adapt his scheme to his personnel wherever he's gone. And really, the only times he hasn't been successful is when they had quarterback injuries. I think the skepticism came on. You know, he is not like the stereotypical like rah rah head coach. Like, he's not Dan Campbell. He's like the antithesis of Dan Campbell. But from just like a football mind standpoint, I think he's got it. We'll see if he has like the head coach mm-hmm. side of things, right? Like there's been plenty of offensive coordinators who flamed out as head coaches, plenty more defensive coordinators who flamed out as head coaches. Really, it's just, to me, it's going to be about, can he get the quarterback situation figured out? Because I think the Saints are, for as much as they've kicked the can down the road, they're set up pretty well in the future. You know, all these contracts come off the books in like 2027. They're going to have a lot of cap space then. Yeah, yeah, they're going to have good draft picks to rebuild the core foundation of this roster. So, I think he's the right guy to get it done. We'll see on that. We're only 3 games in. Yeah, last week was really bad, but I went back and looked yesterday. You know, Dan Campbell's first year, they started 0-8, and the 8th loss was a 44-6 loss to a 2-5 Philadelphia Eagles team. You know, like, this sort of stuff happens with rookie head coaches. They still can get out of it and make something really great out of their organization. So I'm going to be patient even after that pretty ugly performance last week. And I think he's got the goods.
You did call it, Luke. I saw the article, the Murphy's Law, the embodiment of Murphy's Law on a field. I found that very interesting about the last game there with New Orleans.
Yeah. It was bad. Yeah, for your listeners who don't know what Murphy's Law is, it's anything that can go wrong will go wrong, right? Yep. It was pre-snap penalties. It was failures on offense, special teams. It was poor coaching decisions. It was everything, man. It was 10 minutes into that game, they're down 21-0. They've had a punt blocked. They've had another return for a touchdown. They've had a false start on a tush push. Yeah, it was incredibly ugly. this is my eighth season covering the NFL. And I've seen some bad losses. I've seen, you know, a team that had like three quarters of the team out with COVID, you know, get absolutely shellacked on Monday night. And that was probably the worst thing I've seen on a football field. It was really, really bad.
It's like at a certain point, you kind of just have to laugh at it and just move on.
Yeah, no, and for me, I mean, I got to start writing my game story in the first. I wrote that line in the first quarter of that game. Like, oh, and yeah, I was done with it by the third quarter. Yep. So, it was bad. But like, I do think though that like, yeah, crap like that happens.
Yeah.
In the NFL, you know, I don't expect them to be super competitive this week. But like, look, the Green Bay Packers were world beaters for 2 weeks, and they just lost to like a pretty feckless Cleveland Browns team this past weekend. So like literally anything can happen in the NFL, but yeah, I just hope I don't have to go sit through too many more of those this year. It's hard to come up with angles this week.
I mean, last time New Orleans was here in Buffalo, I probably would say that the Bills had the Murphy's Law side of that game. The last time Saints were here in Buffalo, that was a streaker had more rushing yards than the Bills had yards in that game.
Yep.
So we've all seen it. We've all lived through it. But yeah, I do find that noteworthy of like, it's the first time in 8 years, and it is very interesting to see where the two franchises have been since the last time they've been in Buffalo.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that should be, you know, for any fan of any football team, you know, maybe with the exception of the Chicago Bears, I don't know if they finally got it figured out, but like, you know, it's like you go through these really, really rough patches and periods where your team is just completely hopeless and everything sucks. And then you get a Josh Allen and everything looks pretty great after that, you know? Mm-hmm. So I just say it's the type of league where things can change in a hurry. I don't think it's going to change too much this week.
Right. So yeah, I feel bad. We were talking a little bit about that before we brought you on of like, man, what are we going to learn the next few weeks? I mean, these teams maybe aren't going to stack up, but I, you know, it is still the NFL. You mentioned Cleveland and Green Bay. Luke, I do have one other question for you, and this is much more for my morbid curiosity as a college football fan.
Uh-oh.
The offense coordinator for the New Orleans Saints is Doug Nussmeier. His son is Garrett Nussmeier, the quarterback at LSU. Is there a clamoring in New Orleans to maybe draft him, or is that kind of just me in Buffalo not understanding what's going on in New Orleans?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's always going to be a clamoring here in this city for them to draft LSU players, and it was like a huge frustration for a long time. It seemed like they just refused to do it forever. But I don't know if that one would be. I think Nuss has kind of got to get some stuff ironed out here. Meaning his son Garrett. Mm-hmm. He's been kind of hit or miss these first couple of weeks, and I think a lot of people were thinking like, hey, maybe he could be the guy. You know, everybody was excited about Arch Manning because he's a New Orleans kid, and then you know he flamed out in week one. And everybody's like, okay, let's get on the Nuss bus here, and then that hasn't looked so good. So yeah, I don't know. I think that if he kind of gets things turned around to where he plays a lot more like he did last year, you'll see a lot of that in the lead up to the draft next year. I definitely do think the Saints are going to be in the quarterback market next year. But I do think that like it's cooled a little bit here, you know, over the last couple of weeks as he's kind of gotten off to a slow start.
Yeah. Most of the big time quarterbacks, it felt like, have gone off to very slow starts.
But, yeah, you know, we'll see
how that keeps going
for next year. I was like,
right.
I was like, hey, this is gonna be my first time being in like the full like real quarterback draft thing. Like, let's go! I'm excited for this, and I'm watching all these guys in week one. I'm like, Arch Manning, no. Cade Klubnik, hell no. Lenora Sellers, maybe not. it's been kind of a rough go.
We're on to Mendoza in Indiana. We're on to Mendoza in Indiana.
We're on to Mendoza. Yeah, we're following the Mendoza line. That's right.
Luke, thanks so much for jumping on with us. Are you coming up to Buffalo for the game, or are you staying in New Orleans?
I am. This is being my first trip to Buffalo, my second to last stop on the NFL circuit. So I'm very, very much looking forward to it.
And you're coming in at a good time. Like, it's not going to be any sort of harsh
weather. We've had good weather.
It's going to be decent at least.
No, I like that you're trying to convince me of this, but I'm so mad that it's not going to be like 50 degrees there. I've been like living in the night. It's been like 90 here for like 6 months already. I'm tired of going to 70s. Okay.
Right. You hear 75, you're like, that's barely anything. Come on.
At least it'll be cooler. I'll get like, there's that. But we hope you're at least able to enjoy your time here and enjoy the food here. I mean, New Orleans is New Orleans with its market and how the food is down there. But we've got our ways.
Oh, my good friend Catherine Fitzgerald is going to show me around.
Oh, there you go. You're in good company.
Yep, you're in good hands. Yeah, there you go.
K-Fist is going to give me a good time.
Yeah, all right, Luke, enjoy your trip up here, and thanks for jumping on with us, man.
Thanks, guys.
Luke Johnson there on the Wester Hotline of NOLA.com. I really liked his Mickey Loomis answer. I really liked
I had to ask that follow-up. I'm like, okay, he followed up on the kicking in the can thing that I really have remembered over the last couple of years. Of like, this is the price they're paying. Once he followed up with, there have been draft misses, there have been contract misses, I'm like, what's the temperature like there? And I was very surprised by that answer. Because as an outsider, Mickey Loomis needs to go. It's been 23 years. What do you, at this point, like, clearly it's gone stale. And I had even mentioned he should be wearing it that the Saints had gone 7-9 five times with Drew Brees at quarterback. To hear that answer is almost jarring. It kind of gives me a little kick back to a certain hockey team.
Well, I think also you realize maybe there are more teams like that in sports.
Right.
Like, we make fun of the Steelers for basically never firing anybody, but New Orleans kind of has it. I've mentioned I've watched the Dallas Cowboys documentary. Tex Ram and Tom Landry were basically in those jobs for nearly 30 years. Like, and they had really rough runs there at the end. Sometimes it is just like, hey, you're kind of a staple of the organization. It is what it is. And look, to be perfectly honest, look how the Bills are right now. I'm not saying Sean McDermott's going to be the head coach for 30 years. Maybe Brandon Bean's the general manager for 20 years. It's worked. The Bills are very relevant. That might be in the Bills' future. I don't think it's one many of us have thought about. The real post-Allen of, you know, the 5 to 10 years after that, because that's, you know, very far in the future. But that might also be in the Bills' future. Why would we get rid of these guys?
It also is a little bit of the harsh reality of the NFL, too, of like Luke mentions, we're gearing up for looking at, you know, a top 10, maybe top 5 pick. The bottom of the NFL has been so bad that you cannot guarantee New Orleans top 5 pick.
No.
And last year, New Orleans was 5-12. They're not in the top 5 with a 5-win season.
Yeah, and you're seeing that maybe more through now magnifying glass in the AFC. The top of the AFC is great.
It is top heavy.
But the bottom of the AFC is almost unwatchable.
It's fighting for scraps.
Jacksonville, who is what, 1-2? Jacksonville's 1-2 or 2-1?
They're 2-1.
They're 2-1. So that even makes this point more. And Houston's 0-3. Derek, that game was unwatchable. They were both laughably bad. And it looked like two teams that were unprepared, not focused. The game plan was bad.
Look at the division. Miami.
The division in particular. The division.
The Jets. Both are at 0-3. The Giants sitting at 0-3, now making a quarterback change. And then there's also Tennessee, where Cam Ward looks interesting, but that roster is barren.
I think Callahan also is not a head coach.
Yeah, that's also a bad head coach. Like, at least maybe they have a piece there in Kellen Moore with New Orleans. It's not that with Callahan and Tennessee. So again, New Orleans already has competition. Within the AFC, there are 4-0-3 teams like the Saints' record.
And it doesn't help either that, I mean, we mentioned there with Luke right at the end, but the quarterback class, the whole expectation of this was that there might be 4 or 5 first-round quarterbacks.
And you have been talking with me a lot about this off-air.
And I was very excited about it because I was like, this will be great for the Bills, who were hoping draft from 30 to 32. Great, there's going to be some good talent that probably shouldn't be there because a team reached for a quarterback, what have you.
Or a team trading back into the first round.
For a quarterback, right.
And they give you next year's first round pick, for example. Or they give you a heavy price just to move up 4 spots. And you've got a high second round pick, kind of like how they played the Coleman situation. And it's for a quarterback. It doesn't look like that this year.
And instead now I would say this. It's
the
up
Purdue
in the
guy
air.
In me had the eye like twitch when you mentioned an Indiana player.
Mendoza? Mendoza's awesome. But that's the thing. It's sort of up in the air. The initial names are not firing on all cylinders, but Carson Beck at Miami looks very good. Dante Moore at Oregon looks very good. I mentioned Mendoza at Indiana might now be the Heisman favorite after John Mateer is going to undergo thumb surgery at Oklahoma. So maybe this is going to turn around. I'm just not holding my breath because literally all of the big-name quarterbacks, and I include that as a hook'em, you know, all of the big name quarterbacks really not look good at all this year.
Right.
And if anything, their programs have looked dreadful. Clemson and South Carolina especially.
It is fascinating. Again, I really loved what Luke had to say about Mickey Loomis, though, because I've always been fascinated about his tenure.
Mm-hmm.
And now even more so. If he's not yeeted out, like the team wins like what, maybe like 3 or 4 games? I don't know, man. Like it's really, and again, the fan base. Once you've had 23 years of a guy, and you wasted several years of Drew Brees' career, that's already indictable enough.
Yeah, you're, and that's the thing. Most fan bases, and this is not a shot at them. I mean, it's the truth of it.
Yeah.
Won't have nearly as much patience as the people in the room. And yeah, when you mentioned like when you wasted prime years of Drew Brees, when you ultimately didn't get back to another Super Bowl with that core group, the patience is going to be at an all-time low. And now you might be the worst run team, quote unquote, worst run team in the sport in terms of the optics. It's not ideal. 803-0550, the number to call. Did mention a quarterback switch there. I want to jump into that. Jackson Dart getting his first start. Russell Wilson only makes 3 weeks. We'll talk a little bit about that when we come back. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
Jackson Dart is ready. The inside the building, I know there is overwhelming excitement to put him on the field. He really impressed in training camp. In the small bits we've seen on the field, he has been productive. At some point, Giants would have loved just wait a couple weeks, get through the tough part of the schedule. Could not do it anymore. Have to play Jackson Dart. Brian Daboll and Foreman, both quarterbacks today, that the future is now for the New York Giants.
Ian Rapport talking there. The big news from yesterday, it only took 3 games, and the Giants are like, nope, Russell Wilson, you're out. Jackson Dart, you are in.
Context matters, and that's always something we try to live by at this point. Right, Zach? Context matters. Russell Wilson had thrown for 450 yards in Week 2 against Dallas, but the man played so poorly against Kansas City. And a game that was, it was winnable. You had a chance. But Wilson, that sequence in that red zone scenario, where I'd be scared of asking Wilson to pass the salt for me because it's going to go 15 feet over my head. But he airmails one. To airmail it out of the back of the end zone on 4th and goal,
yeah,
that's a crime against football. And there's no easy part of the Giants' schedule to put Jackson Dart in.
No, funny enough, the easiest game until you're like at the end of the year is, funny enough, against the Saints. The problem is it's on the road after the Chargers. That's their next game, at the Saints. But then it's Philadelphia and Denver and Philadelphia again.
Yeah, it just... I am worried that Dart might be coming in a little too quickly with a team that might not be that good. But then you look at the Dallas game, for example, and you're like, okay, they have flashes of promise.
I think there is talent there. I think Russell Wilson. And what's funny
and
is...
And even then, there's talent sometimes in Russell Wilson. The man put up a career high in passing yards with the New York Giants.
And that's the thing is, it is funny how this happened, but I also think... That's how teams kind of feel about the Dallas defense, which is...
It has a lot more to say about Dallas' defense.
I think it has a lot more to say there. Really, he was doing well in that game just throwing up moon balls and just praying that Wandell Robinson or Malik Nabers came down with them. And they did a lot against Dallas. And then they didn't against the Chiefs. And if you get to a point where your quarterback can't get, what, the first target to Malik Nabers until the third quarter, maybe even a little bit later, I think that's where it's time to pull the plug. Dart, as a rookie, probably just through to sheer ignorance of not knowing really what's going on because it's his first NFL start, will probably find number one.
Yes.
Purely off of, I know he's awesome and I need to get the ball out quick. There is something to that of the rookie will probably just get the ball to the best guys. You hope it's accurate. You hope he makes some of the right decisions. And some of that is not always correct. I mean, Justin Jefferson fantasy owners will understand that with J.J. McCarthy.
Right.
Who really had one good quarter through 2 games. Now he's hurt with a high ankle sprain. We'll see about Dart. I will say, though, he comes in having 3 full years of starts at Ole Miss in the SEC, very successful years as well, and he seemed to progressively get better and better as his career went on, ultimately culminating, no, not with a playoff appearance, but with over 4,000 yards in college, 29 touchdowns, almost 70% completion percentage, and he did look good in the preseason. I just, for me, and I'll always get here, and sometimes it is not the correct way to go about it, sometimes it absolutely is, but I will always lean into starting the young guys faster than maybe normal, maybe more than you'd want to, because you'll find out. You'll see what the issues are. You'll see where you got to fix. They'll get game reps, and they'll get better. To a certain extent, it's like Deion Sanders, although with Shadur, it's a little rough, but I actually kind of agree with him on this, at least with quarterbacks. I didn't learn much, you know, sitting on the bench. Like, I learned playing, and some quarterbacks, no, you do sit on the bench. Aaron Rodgers probably is not the Aaron Rodgers we know if he doesn't sit for, what, 2-3 years behind Brett Favre. You know, Allen has credited his injury and sitting for, what, 3-4 weeks behind Derek Anderson and just seeing how the game went, but he had also some starts before that. He kind of knew what he had to work on.
The plan was for Allen to really sit a lot, and then it was Peterman starts, and it's so poor that they have to put Allen in right away, and it messes up the entire development plan, kind of. But I will say, it's cruel, but it's also going to help in the long run here that Jackson Dart plays the Eagles twice next month.
It's going to hurt, but
it's twice in 3 weeks, but then ready? After that, life gets better. The 49ers are banged up to hell. They don't have Nick Bosa this year. The Bears, you could probably make some plays against the Bears. Then the Packers, of course, and, you know, that got a little tougher. Same with the Lions again. But then Patriots, Commanders, Vikings, that one's tough. Raiders, Cowboys to end the year. So the end of the year is a little bit more forgiving for a rookie quarterback. It's just absolutely brutal that he has to show up to a 3 week span of Eagles, Broncos, Eagles.
Yeah, that's not it. And that's the thing too, the Broncos, their offense has been sputtering. They're 1-2. Bo Nix has not looked great in his second year. The defense is still phenomenal. That defense is still incredible. I think a lot of this also that they waited to maybe put Jackson Dart in, Andrew Thomas. They wanted to get their all-pro left tackle back in the lineup and have him had played a game. And now I think they feel more comfortable throwing him in there. But that Sunday night game was really bad to watch. And there is that level of hate watching. Of course, being Bills fans, we're watching Kansas City, we want them to lose. But there is also that painful level of hate watching, seeing another team that you're sitting there going, if this was our team, we would have capitalized on all these mistakes. We would have blown them out. And yet you're watching a bad football team, and they're just unable to do anything. There were so many points, especially in the first half, where Kansas City is just unable to move the ball down the field. They look broken. They look awful. Right. But New York somehow looks worse.
New York somehow looks worse. And then you also remember, though, that 450-yard game that Wilson has, though, he puts up a prayer ball and loses them the football game.
That's exactly right. I mean, they lose that game because he just chucks up another moon ball, and his guys don't come down with it. It's instead an interception.
It's a miss.
Yeah.
It goes way too far infield. If it stays on the sideline, there's actually a decent chance of at least at worst an incompletion. But it goes to the middle of the field. Safety's able to just get under it, comfortably catch it, and Malik Nabers has to make a tackle instead. I never truly understood the idea of having Russell Wilson as their starting quarterback, because Wilson probably wanted to have an opportunity to be more of a full season starter. Like, that's his aim. And then you draft a quarterback, and everyone knew you were going to be drafting a quarterback at some point. It just wasn't going to be at pick 3 or 4. Was it 4?
I think Abdul Carter was 4.
Yes. Sorry. Forgive me for that one. No, it was 3. Abdul Carter was 3rd.
Was it Mason Graham 4?
Yes.
4 or 5? Yeah.
No, Will Campbell was 4.
But
Mason
Graham
was 5.
Yeah. Top 3.
But anyway, I look at it and go, yeah, like signing Jameis Winston made sense at the time. Like, that makes sense, because if you're going to draft a rookie quarterback, you've got Winston, he'll play a couple of games, it'll be pure chaos, you'll learn what not to do, and then you go from there. And the man is as supportive as a teammate as any you can possibly imagine. apparently.
But you might also win some of those games.
You might also win one
with
of those
with
games.
How your defenses were able to perform, both against. I mean, the Dallas game maybe not. And you ultimately lose that game. Your defense gives up a lot of points. It's a track meet. It's a really fun watch as a neutral fan. But Washington week one, you lose that game 21-6,
and you look wholly uninspiring. And Wilson has one game, and it says more about Dallas than it does about the Giants in any way. But the other part of it is how outwardly the rest of the quarterback room is. And then there's Russell Wilson. And it's like, that seems like it didn't make much sense. And I get it. You want to try to win games. You want to save jobs, everything, this, that, and the other. But Wilson is not that player anymore, and it is continuing to be proven.
I wonder
what they're going to do with him now, though, because...
Oh, I mean, yeah, I think he's just going to sit on the bench. They've got two vets now, which is going to be weird. It's going to be after the season, I think, something happens. I just, with Wilson especially, I've just never seen a clear Hall of Fame trajectory, his Seattle career, be extinguished so fast and so, like, suddenly and so aggressively than his times with Denver, Pittsburgh, and New York. I mean, just flat out, like, for him... I don't think he's going into the Hall anymore. There's been too much now of his career where he's been an objectively bad quarterback. He has not been good.
I don't know. His career in Seattle is long enough that I think that he'll be fine. He'll end up in the Hall. It's not going to be right away, though. It will take time because he does have a Super Bowl win. That is something to his favor. He also was Seattle's quarterback for 8 years. Excuse me, 9 years. 9 full seasons as Seattle's quarterback, and he was among the best to do it in that time. So I do think he'll make the Hall of Fame. However, you are right about this. These last 4 years now have made it painful to watch because of how sharp and sudden that crash was. And also, it makes an interesting case of, okay, how great were you really?
Well, and that's why I wonder, like, how many of these voters, when he eventually does retire, will sit there and go, I think we saw the real Russell Wilson away from one of the better rosters of the 2010s in the Legion of Boom that was built so perfectly for him with the run game with Mark. And that's the thing, too. A lot of his early career was they were defense and run game with Russell making a few big plays. We only really saw the let Russ cook moment. It's probably about 2.5-3 years. That is like really that's the movement, that's the moment where why isn't he getting an MVP, what the hell, like all this stuff.
Yeah, it's really 2019, 2020.
And then it does now be that probably a lot of his former teammates won't campaign for him.
Yeah.
The Legion of Boom openly does not like him, or at least maybe it's been a few years, openly didn't love being his teammate once they all left.
Yeah.
And then like how much Pete Carroll really seemed to favor Wilson.
Yeah, it is going to be an interesting study to see at least. I do think that there is enough there that he makes the Hall of Fame. But like you said, the campaigning thing probably doesn't help. Like not having teammates really in your corner will not help. And these past 4 years have just been, it's a tough watch.
It's a real tough watch. There's been blips. Dallas, right? There was blips his second year in Denver. But for the most part, it has been, you find out he's really not a great teammate. You kind of have to run a very certain offense with him. Once he couldn't move, he really became quite bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just it's a sad way for his career to end because of the high highs in Seattle, where he really did kind of change how people were able to look at the position. 5'11", but a stocky guy that could throw a beautiful deep ball and could move around. I mean, he somewhat changed how people were able to look at the position. You didn't have to be this big guy. He was a third-round pick mainly due to his size out of Wisconsin. And immediately he was up there as one of the best rookies we'd ever seen. 26 touchdowns, I think 10 picks. He was great.
That Matt Flynn contract looking terrible right away.
And Matt Flynn, greatest backup quarterback performance ever. That Week 17 game against Detroit where he threw like 6 touchdown passes at home. Beautiful. But yeah, it's a sad end for his career, and I think this is probably it. I don't think another team's going to bring him in to be a starter. I just don't.
Absolutely not.
803-0550, the number to call. Sabres Live coming up at 12 o'clock. Also, Bills head coach Sean McDermott will be speaking with the media as we get the week underway for the Bills. You can follow all of Sal's updates there over on Twitter, at Sal Sports, for the latest. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer with you here. Tom Pelissero tweeted out a story now, essentially. 128 modern era players nominated for the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2026. Some fun names on here. We were just looking through real quick. You're talking Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. Will he ever get in the Hall of Fame? Quarterbacks, there's been 10 named. Few of them make complete sense. Drew Brees leads that list. Then it kind of gets real interesting. I know Sneaky Joe has his fight against Eli Manning. I think he'll eventually get in due to the two Super Bowls. Phillip Rivers is much more of the stats accumulation, the high highs for him. But you also have names on here like Alex Smith and Rich Gannon and Jake DeLome. And it's like, oh, man, I don't know about some of these.
I loved Jake DeLome on the Panthers. Why is he on this list? Nothing against – I don't want to say nothing against Jake DeLome because this is clearly against Jake DeLome. But, like, man, I liked watching Jake DeLome as a Panther.
He had about two good years.
It was more like five or six.
Mm.
But even then, it's only five or six.
Yeah, he only hits 20 touchdowns or over 20 touchdowns twice.
Which is why we even did the Russell Wilson conversation here a little bit of he was at least there for a while. And he was good for that – for his entirety of his Seattle career, and it's 10 years. So there's something there.
There's something there.
There's merit to that. And even then, I am kind of leaning back toward you. When we were talking over the break, yeah, maybe Wilson might not make it after all. The Super Bowl win helps. That's something Jake DeLome does not have. Thanks, right. Patriots. Like, come on. We don't need to do this.
The Gannon one is a fun...
Gannon's a fun one.
Mainly because his career only got interesting after he was 34 years old.
Yeah.
But like I mean, obviously it's with the Raiders. He wins an MVP. He's got a 4,000-yard passing season in there. He makes a Super Bowl, like the whole thing.
Yeah.
But he was pretty much a career backup or even just a spot starter for much of the early parts of his career. And then with just the Raiders, the light flipped on.
This will be interesting to look at going through it, through the eventuality.
Yeah, we only got to the quarterbacks. I did see Sean Alexander's name for the running backs, and I was like, yes, but I don't know if that's going to end up happening. That'll do it for us today. We'll be back on tomorrow. Coming up next, though, after a quick timeout, Sabres Live. This is WGR.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.